My eyes flit to Nils, who's smirking at him good-naturedly.
Speaking like a Kelth again, Miles?
Nils teases. Miles winces and drops my hands, spots of red lighting both his pale cheeks.
I'm so sorry. I mean Mage Harrow.
He shakes his head in self-censure.
I grew up in a border town along the river.
He shrugs. Bad habits of speech. And quite a bit else. Too many Celtic ways. He trails off. A lower river Gardnerian, like me.
Nils hangs his arm around Miles's shoulders and grins at me. Miles here is just overcome, Mage Harrow. It's not every day he holds the hand of such a beautiful woman.
The skin on my back prickles with a sweeping heat, and I notice Nils and Miles looking past me. Their eyes go wide, and they immediately straighten to military attention, stiff as posts. They slam their fists with a thump over the Urthia orbs on their chests in a formal salute. I turn. There's a mage coming through mist, his cloak flapping behind him.
Vale.
His scorching eyes are the first thing to cut through fog. He shoots Nils a brief, deadly, piercing glare as he stalks swiftly past, pointedly ignoring Miles and me. I cross my arms protectively in front of myself, and my eyes narrow to angry slits. I can sense Vale's heat trailing behind him in a furious flare. He's all askew, his hair mussed into uneven spikes, his clothing wrinkled, his affinity lines turbulent as a wild storm. His residual trail of angry fire lashes out at me in whipping tendrils, gradually losing force as both Vale and his fire are swallowed up by the steamy fog.
"Where's he going, do you think?"
I ask.
"Probably to Morning Report,"
Nils says, his posture relaxing.
"That's Vale Gardner,"
Miles puts in helpfully, and with more than a little awe. "The son of the Black Witch herself."
"I know,"
I tell them distractedly, staring off into the fog where Vale disappeared. Miles looks down the path, his expression tightening.
"He's the strongest one of all the level fives. He's got her fire. That's what they say, miss."
Nils raises his brow at Miles.
Miles winces. "I mean, Mage Harrow, miss."
Nils laughs and pats Miles on the back.
"You, my friend, are a hopeless case."
Miles shoots Nils a rueful smile.
"No one forces you to mingle with the lower class."
Nils' expression turns serious.
"No one here is lower class,"
he says, his tone emphatic.
"We're all Gardnerians."
A tingle of warmth courses through me.
"It's hard to get used to,"
I reassure Miles, heartened by Nils's startling, broad-minded acceptance.
"I'm Lower River, too."
I look to Nils. "Mage was a slur there, always an insult. The Celts would even use it against each other."
"Well, it's no longer an insult,"
Nils says, his hidden fire breaking through heatedly.
"And we'll cure them of their penchant for using it as such."
I find myself marveling over how different Nils is from Vale. There's no sense of elitism, no contempt in his eyes. It's deeply refreshing. A vision from a storybook cuts through the fog before us, running toward me. I realize it's Rosebeth, and relief washes over me like cool water. She's dressed like a Gardnerian princess. No more ill-fitting black wool. Her dark silken tunic fits like a glove over her lovely figure, shimmering even in this dim light, her skirts swishing. Blue iron flowers are delicately embroidered along the collar and edging of her tunic. Her long black hair is beautifully styled, with small looping braids decorating her wavy black locks.
"Tessie!"
she tearfully cries, falling into my arms, her fine silks slick against my palms. Her magic is as weak as ever, a small trickle of water, so faint I can barely read it.
"I'm so glad you're safe,"
I say, embracing her. "Have you seen my family? I need to find out where they are."
"They're fine and safe,"
she breathlessly assures me.
"I'll take you to them. Oh, Tessie, I thought you were dead."
She hugs me again, and tears sting my eyes. "I'm so glad to be safe and in the company of friends.
I look to Nils and see him beaming at us, respect lighting his eyes. Not everyone here is like Vale Gardner, I realize with immeasurable relief and no small amount of spite. Then I look to Miles and am momentarily caught off guard by his expression. It's like a thousand stars have burst into view before his eyes, and his mouth hangs open as he gazes at Rosebeth. I turn back to my friend, searching for what's inspired Miles's unbridled awe. Rosebeth is running her silk-covered forearm artlessly across her eyes to wipe away her tears, giving a loud sniff that's almost a full-blown snort. But this does nothing to diminish Miles's mesmerized stupor.
"Oh, I'm so sorry,"
she says, looking toward the young soldiers as if noticing them for the first time.
"Where are my manners?"
Her eyes lock onto Miles, instantly as riveted by him as he is by her, as if he's not some plain lower river lad, but a prince stepping through the mist of her most cherished dream. Incredulous, I glance up to find Nils eyeing them, then me with dancing amusement, clearly struggling not to burst into outright laughter. And in spite of everything, my family's homelessness, our extreme poverty, my scrape with violent death, I momentarily rally. Perhaps we have a chance for a good life among our own people in Gardneria, a future of happiness for us all. Nils glances at his pocket watch.
Miles, we've got to report.
He smiles at Rosebath and me.
We're free again at midday. Perhaps you lovely mages would care to meet us at the dining tent? We could take our food together at the central fires.
Oh, yes,
Rosebeth breathes, her eyes still stuck on awkward Miles.
I'd like that a great deal.
She looks to me hopefully. We're all Gardnerians. Nils's beautiful words hang bright in my mind.
I'd like that, too,
I tell Nils with a heartfelt smile. They take their leave, Rosebeth glancing privily after them, her lashes shyly fluttering.
You look like an Upper River girl,
I tell her, grinning affectionately at my childhood friend. I momentarily wonder what it would feel like to wear such fine things.
Jenna's helping me, she says brightly. She's made me her pet. That's what she calls me anyway. She's ever so wonderful, Tessie.
Then Rosebeth bites worriedly at her lip, her expression darkening.
You've met her, Tessie. She was rather unkind to you that horrible night. She called you names, but you shouldn't judge her for it. You confused us all so, clinging like you did to Jules Christian.
Memories of that night slam through me. Jenna, that horrid Upper River girl, calling me a race traitor, encouraging that terrifying mage to strike down poor Daisy.
She's just so beautiful,
Rosebeth enthuses, shaking off the darkness, and I feel a flash of bitter, fleeting jealousy that she can shed the trauma of it all so easily.
And Jenna's going to fast to one of the level 5 mages. Everyone wants them, Tessie. They have the most power and the most money. Most of them are quite young and quite a few unfasted.
I can barely keep up with her. She's talking so excitedly.
They have their own houses. Mage Vale Gardner has 2.
2? I'm disgusted by such unnecessary luxury. I think about our cottage. Mama's quilts, Papa's things, Ren's toys, all my apothecary tools. Our cat, Patches. Pain twists at my insides, and my stomach tightens with grief. Rosebeth glances around, biting her lip again, as if searching for the right way to tell me something troubling.
Take care around Vale Gardner and Fane Quillen,
she warns me, her tone low.
I know they helped you, but you should know that there are disturbing rumors about them.
I quirk my brow in question.
I heard,
she whispers, shielding her mouth,
that they might have evil tendencies.
She shoots me a serious, scandal-fraught look.
Like, they might fancy each other. Someone actually asked Vale Gardner about it and
she trails off, clearly too nervous to continue. What? What did they say to him? It's always irritated me, her tendency to be hesitant and trail off like this. She takes a break from chewing her lip.
It might have been in jest. It probably was. They asked him if he wants to fast to feign Quillen. And do you know what he said?
I shake my head.
He said, "And what if I did?" Can you imagine, Tessie? He only gets away with such things because he's Carnissa Gardner's son. He shouldn't speak so, even if it's in jest. It makes people think he's engaging in...
She goes back to gnawing at her lip, rendered mute by her own sordid imaginings. I take in a deep breath, remembering how I overheard Fane's mention of rumors about him and Vale. I've heard whispers of such forbidden relationships, and know what cruel things can happen if the couple is discovered. A couple of years ago, the Cooper's son, Flynn, and the young farrier, Nick, were beaten senseless in Doveshire's town square as a warning. I found the story to be deeply troubling, but unfortunately, not surprising. I'm clear on what mobs are capable of, and that relationships like these are not tolerated by Celts or Gardnerians, or really anyone else in the Western realm. Can the rumors be true? I'm suddenly filled with worry for both Vale and Fane. Vale is insufferably arrogant, but he saved my life, and Jules's. And Fane has been nothing but kind to me. But what of Vale's kiss? I wonder, confused. There was so much fire in it.
You've got to wash yourself up, Tessie, Rosebeth says with nervous urgency, interrupting my thoughts. There's not much time.
Time for what?
Didn't you hear? They're fasting all of us, tonight. We've today to choose partners, or they're choosing them for us.
I can feel myself blanch. Shock coursing through me. No. I shake my head emphatically. That's just not possible. I'm not fasting to anyone. Certainly not tonight.
We have to, Tessie. Don't you see? That way we'll all have family here. People to take us in. You have to do it, Tess. For your family.
Her eyes take on a dreamy quality.
And all the young men. They're so dashing and handsome.
The image of Nils's easy grin flits into my mind. Would it be so bad, fasting to someone like him? He seems kind and smart and good-humored, and not pretentious at all. He's nothing like pompous Vale Gardner. And fasting to Nils would give my family connections and safety. No, I think to myself. It's too quick. How could I fast to a young man I barely know? But then I fully realize what Rosebeth just said. I have to choose, or someone else will choose for me. Though I'm deeply troubled by this, I try to push all the fasting worries to the back of my mind. After all, I reassure myself, surely no one would force me to fast against my will. No, there's only one thing that's important right now. Rosie, please, I need you to take me to my family. Chapter 15. Rigid Lines. The first thing I see as I near the tent that's been assigned to my family is Wren, sitting on the ground in front of it, looking desolate. As soon as he sees me, he bursts up and runs to me on his skinny 8-year-old legs, his arms outstretched as he dissolves into tears.
Tessie!
He sobs, clinging to me.
I thought you died! No one would tell us where you were.
Shh, I'm fine, I tell him, my own tears running down my face as I pat his unwashed, knotted hair. Oh, Wren, I'm so happy to see you. I pull back and smile at him, forcing a look of untroubled reassurance. But even my false smile almost dissolves as I take in the sight of him. He's even sicker than he was. The chronic red grip he's been fighting off for years is slowly pulling him under. His voice is wheezier, his eyes rimmed red, and more of the small crimson spots ring his mouth. I have to get him medicine, and soon, I agonize. Medicine we'll never be able to afford. Medicine you have to be a level 5 mage to afford. Wren coughs, deep and rattling, and I smooth back his stringy hair. Everything's going to be fine now, I tell him. But we need money, and we have none, and you need medicine.
Where will we live, Tessie?
I don't know. I don't know. We're on the poorest end of a sea of refugees. I keep my smile bright. I'll find us a nice little cottage, warm and dry. Don't you worry yourself. We've no money. We've nothing. We've nowhere to live. I'm scared, Ren. I kiss his head, wanting him to believe the fairy tale I'm spinning, wanting to believe it myself. But I feel lost and desperate and afraid.
What happened to Patches, Tessie?
The question hangs in the air between us, dark and terrible. Our cat, our lovely calico cat, probably dead in the fire.
I'm sure she got away,
I tell him, my voice breaking. She's smart. She can make her own way. Ren pulls back and looks at me with level grief.
I don't think so, Tessie. I think she's dead.
We stare at each other for one intolerable, horribly honest moment.
I'm sorry, Ren.
I choke out, my voice ragged with tears. There's salt on my lips.
I'm so sorry.
I hate them,
he says with a grimace, his eyes hard and fierce with pain.
I hope our mages killed them all. All those Celts and Urisk.
No, Ren, I say, trying to soothe him. The bad ones, maybe, but not all of them.
They're all bad,
he cries, hiccuping from his sobbing. His words send a chill through me. Not all of them, Ren. Jules isn't. If he's still alive. But Ren is unmoved. Jules is our friend, I remind him. He tried to help us.
I don't care,
Ren says, pulling out of my embrace, his expression gone hard as stone.
He didn't save us. Our Black Witch and the mages did. The Celts and the Urisk tried to kill us, but they lost, and now we're going to kill them.
Uneasy concern pricks at me. I'm thrown by the sharpness of my little brother's newfound hatred. Hatred with such savagely drawn lines. Chapter 16. Stainen. No, Grandfather. I adamantly insist, my fire rising. I'm not fasting tonight. He's staring at me with his usual daft, head-in-the-clouds benevolence, which was very endearing when my father was alive. But ever since my grandfather became my official guardian, I've found his well-meaning incompetence to be a source of endless trouble. We almost died because of it, because he wouldn't let me use his wand.
Of course you'll fast, child.
He reassures me with a condescending pat on my arm. Frustrated, I glance around our temporary home. A plain military tent, but it's well-appointed with three sturdy cots, warm bedding, a wood stove that's keeping out the rainy chill, and lanterns to light the gloom. Warm, safe, and dry. And we're well-fed, too. The fare here is simple, but readily available. The Upper River folk are turning their noses up at it, but I'm thrilled to see the huge bowl of barley soup thick with carrots that Ren's rapidly consuming. A hefty chunk of buttered brown bread on the small table beside him. Better food than we've had in a long time. But what happens when we leave here? Where will our meals come from then? Will we be beggars on the streets of Valgard? Maybe there's no choice but to wand fast. No, I'll find a way, I stubbornly vow. I could go to Mage Annalise and beg her for a job. I'm a good apothecary already. Clever and well-practiced. I could do prep work for her if she's hiring. The pay probably won't be much, but we could rent a room until I secure an apprenticeship in Verpachia. And if I can't work for her, maybe she'll know someone else who will give me a job. But Grandfather is insistent.
The Ancient One will send you the right young man tonight, just like he sent our blessed Black Witch to liberate us.
He says with a reverent smile.
If he can do all that, he can certainly provide a fast mate for you. Have faith, Tesla. I'm praying on it.
My hackles rise. Grandfather's prayers again. Prayers while he passively waits. I prefer my own prayers to the Ancient One for strength while I actually do things, like keep us fed. I need to get myself cleaned up, I tell Grandfather. Where is there water enough for bathing? And fresh clothes?
Ah, he tells me with a hopeful smile. Soon, tomorrow, at the very latest the day after that. They didn't expect so many of us, but it's no matter, waiting one more day.
At midday, I go to join Nils and Miles and Rosebeth, resigned to my wretched appearance. Despite my resolve not to be wand-fasted, I'm thrilled to spot Nils again. I find them all just past the long dining tent, gathered around one of the central fires, benches set around the small bonfires in compact rows. Mostly young people are gathered there, soldiers and refugees alike, the mood one of giddy excitement. Raucous cheers go up every time a grouping of our military dragons flies overhead, heading south to the front lines. They're all bright-eyed, and many have managed to wash up and obtain decent clothing. Only some of the Lower River cook boys in the dining tent still look as bedraggled as I do. Rosebeth is sitting close to the fire next to Miles, the two of them lost in their own happy bubble. Nils stands nearby with Jenna and her Upper River friends, the young women laughing and chatting animatedly. The girls from that night. I'm rocked by a powerful flashback. The White Wand. The children screaming and crying. Being dragged away from Wren. The dragon snarling. The fire balled up inside me. Then the terrible cold. Heart racing, I force myself to breathe deep, struggling to calm down and push the terrible memory away. Jenna's eyes meet mine and narrow as her smile turns calculating. She leans in and whispers something to Nils. Nils turns to look at me and visibly stiffens, his face hardening into a grimace. I tilt my head in confusion, my stomach clenching into a tight knot. Why does he look so hateful? Nils breaks away from the crowd and strides quickly toward me. Is it true? He demands as he nears. That you embraced a Celt? Hope drains away and despair rises like black waters. Yes, I say, fighting back a swelling dread. My friend, Jules Christian. But it isn't what you think. He tried to save me. Nils's frown grows furious and he spits at me, the spittle landing on my borrowed tunic. My words catch tight in my throat. Stinen, he hisses, then turns on his heel to rejoin Jenna and her friends. It's such an unexpected blow that I can't move. I can't breathe. I look pleadingly at Rosebeth. My shy friend's lips tremble, her eyes full of momentary conflict. Then she averts her gaze and leans into Miles, making her alliance painfully known. Miles shoots me a brief look of outraged betrayal, then puts his arm around Rosebeth and pulls her to him protectively. And then there's Jenna. The cruel, gloating look in her eyes knifes clear through me before she turns back to Nils with a flirtatious smile. I slump down onto a bench, watching all my hopes flit away into a dark abyss. We'll be worse than poor, I realize with an incapacitating terror. Worse than Lower River Gardnerians. We'll be the beggars no one will help. I don't know how long I sit there, the silent pariah in their midst, the object of dark whispering and barely concealed pointing, sinking deeper and deeper into misery. Wren, what will happen to Wren? I know the answer to this full well. I know exactly what's going to happen to us. It's like a nightmare about to consume us whole. Abruptly, everyone seated around me stands, all the soldiers coming to swift attention. I look up the path and see a large grouping of level 5 mages, wildly impressive with their silver-striped cloaks, fine uniforms and powerful, confident strides, including Vale and Fane. The lower-ranking soldiers around the fire and by the path throw their fists over the silver Urthea orbs that mark their chests. The civilians bring fists over hearts in their own salute as the mage is near, the outpouring of fierce respect palpable on the cool air. Our most powerful mages, the mages who helped the Black Witch liberate all of us. I slowly rise to my feet and join the standing crowd, my mind a tumult. Vale's fiery eyes flare with intensity as he spots me. Fane is beside him, and his eyes follow the trajectory of Vale's gaze. He immediately breaks from the ranks of the level 5 mages and makes for me, like a defiant bird leaving his flock. His expression is congenial, but his eyes blaze with determination. The other level 5 mages stop, and the whole crowd turns to watch Fane. My head jerks back in surprise as Fane falls to one knee in front of me with theatric grace. He drops his head, his forearm coming up before him, fist clenched in the posture of formal supplication. Nils and the others are gaping at us, silent and stunned. Fane's voice sounds out clear as a bell.
"Dearest, loveliest Mage Tesla Harrow, I beseech you for your forgiveness. I, Mage Fane Quillen, am an ignorant fool who is not fit to kiss your shoes. I am the peasant, clearly, not you."
He lifts his head to shoot Vale a quelling look.
"Are you watching, Vale?" he asks. "This is how it's done."
Then he looks to me and waits, a slight smile tilting his mouth, but genuine apology in his eyes. I blink at him, stunned and completely dumbstruck for one long moment. Finally, I find my voice. "I forgive you, Mage Quillen," I reply, overwhelmed and deeply touched by his unexpected and decidedly public support. "Please, Mage, you may rise."
"May the Ancient One bless you for your graceful forbearance, my sweet lady,"
he says as he stands and takes my hand, kissing it with dramatic flair. He lifts his gaze and smiles slyly at me, but there's something deeper there, and unflinchingly serious. Respect. Vale is watching us, one eyebrow cocked, his lips tightly pursed, his eyes gone dark and guarded. With a graceful swirl of his cloak, Fane rejoins the level 5 ranks, and gives me an impish wink as they continue on. Vale determinedly does not glance in my direction, though a ripple of his fire sears over me as he passes.
Chapter 17 Iron Flowers.
"Tessie, can I talk to you?"
I let out a long sigh, then stop and turn around to find Rosebeth hanging shyly back. She's biting nervously at her lip, her doll-like beauty and floral-trimmed garments so pretty and fresh, so out of place amid the lengthening shadows and the thunder rumbling in the distance under a darkening sky. Fane's public show of support and affection has thrown them all into confusion, everyone around the bonfire visibly reevaluating whether or not I should be shunned, now that I've made very public inroads into the most exclusive Gardnerian club of all, the level 5 mages. One step removed from the Black Witch herself. Rosebeth pulls nervously at her lovely silk skirt, the little iron flowers at the hem fidgeting along with her.
"I'm sorry things are going so badly for you, Tessie," she tells me. "It's just, Jen has been so good to me, and Miles, he wants to fast to me."
Her rose petal mouth pulls up in a wavering smile, begging for my approval, like a timid lamb.
"And they so want us to be friends, but..."
Her smile trembles away. "You have to keep your distance from me." I fill in for her bluntly, but not unkindly. Nonetheless, Rosebeth wilts under my steady gaze.
"There's nothing I can do, Tessie. Jenna hates you so. I wish..."
She trails off, unsure. I narrow my eyes at her. "I saved those girls," I remind her. "Jenna and the rest of them." Rosebeth averts her eyes, chewing more frantically on her lip, unable to meet my gaze.
"Well, that's not what they say, Tessie."
She shrugs, hunching down.
"Everyone says you stole a wand that you had no business using."
And that you could have gotten everyone killed. That you only did it to shield yourself and Jules Christian. And that the mages were about to save us and you interfered.
Anger and hurt roil through me. Is that what they say? She nods, her eyes venturing toward mine, skittish and innocent. I sigh, my temper dampening, then relent and reach out to touch my friend's arm.
It's all right, Rosie.
I give her an encouraging smile that feels thin and false.
Don't trouble yourself. I'll be okay, regardless of what they say.
No, you won't. I inwardly scoff at myself. You have nowhere to go. No help. No fast mate to save you. No money, no home, no prospects. Pain twists at my insides, but there's no sense in hurting my gentle friend. I want her to be happy and protected, the way I'd want a child protected. I want her to be safe.
I think you and Miles will be very happy together.
I give her arm a gentle squeeze.
I'm glad you're fasting to him.
Rosie brightens, shedding her momentary sadness like a child given a sweet.
Isn't Miles so lovely?
Then she wavers, growing momentarily subdued.
It's too bad no one will have you now, Tessie, because of Jules Christian. But
she smiles, uncertainly at me.
Maybe there's still some hope. There's still Mage Quillen. Perhaps all the rumors about him aren't true. Maybe he's sweet on you, Tessie.
I think of the troubled look in Fane's eyes when he brought up the rumors to Vale. No, I realize. All the rumors about Fane are absolutely true. I smile at her and nod, biting back all the things I really want to say. Bitter, troubled things that would just thrust her into confusion and destroy our tenuous bond.
You can come in if you want,
I tell her, turning to untie the flap to my family's tent, knowing I'll find it empty. Grandfather took Ren to be blessed by one of the base's priests and sanctified with healing ablutions. He needs expensive medicine, not just prayer, I sourly reflect. I pull the tent flap open, and my eyes widen in surprise.
Oh, Tessie! Rosebeth enthuses from behind me. Someone sent you flowers! And, oh, there's a present!
There's a large package on my cot, wrapped in parchment and tied with ribbon. A beautiful bouquet of iron flowers graces the top, the flowers glowing a deep blue in the dim light of the tent. A small envelope lies beside them. Rosebeth watches with dancing anticipation as I cross the tent's length, light a lantern and kneel by my cot. I can hear her excited breathing just over my shoulder. I untie the ribbon on the package and gasp as the parchment falls away. Inside is a wildly beautiful tunic and long skirt made of outrageously expensive Ishkarton gold weave. The black silk shimmers gold and red along the folds as the lantern light hits it. Small rubies grace the neckline and hem. It's the most exquisite clothing I have ever seen.
Oh, Tessie! Rosebeth gushes. You'll be the prettiest one at the fasting. Who sent it? Open the card!
With shaking hands, I open the small envelope.
Dearest, loveliest Mage Tessla Harrow, please accept this token of my deep and unwavering affection. Your ignorant, unworthy servant, Mage Fane Quillen.
Oh, you're being courted!
Rosebeth cries with delight, clapping her hands and bouncing on her heels.
By a level 5 mage! Oh, Tessie, think of the parties and the fancy things you'll have! Oh, how lucky you are!
No, not courting, I realize with warm certainty. Just unabashed, overwhelming kindness. Tears sting at my eyes, and I blink them back.
He's so handsome and dashing, Rosebeth says happily. Jenna was wrong about him after all.
No, my thoughts counter with decided firmness. Jenna's not wrong. But it doesn't matter. Not a bit. I cradle the exquisite tunic in my hands, the silk as light as a feather. A tear streaks down my face, and I wipe it back. A fierce wave of gratitude washes over me.
followed by an equally fierce desire to protect Fane. I don't care what people say he is. I don't care who he loves. He saved me and my entire family, along with Vale. He literally gave me the shirt off his back. He saw me nursed back to health, saved me from being humiliated by all the other Gardnerians. And now this. I hug the tunic to my chest, bringing my hand up to cover my eyes and catch my tears. Chapter 18. Embroidery. I'm still hugging the beautiful clothing to my chest as I hover at the entrance to Fane's tent. Twilight darkens the sky, the thunder in the distance growing more insistent. I take in the enormity of the base from this elevated height, the fog having lifted, a multitude of torches springing to life. There are long rows of tents and scattered campfires covering the entire valley, right up to the surrounding mountains. A small flock of our dragons makes their way across the sky in the distance, headed south. I peek inside, the tent flap tied back a fraction. Fane is reclining on his plush, tapestry-covered divan, a drink in one hand, a thick book open on his lap. He beams as he catches sight of me, his eyes dancing with amusement.
Ah, the fair warrior Tesla. Come in. I've been expecting you.
Awkwardly, I enter and pull the tent flap closed as I hug the beautiful dress, the warmth from his expensive stove instantly enveloping me. I stand before him, my back ramrod stiff as he lounges back and waits. Mage Quillen, I say with heartfelt emotion, I've come to thank you for your great kindness.
Oh, please, Tesla. He scoffs good-naturedly.
Surely we're on a first-name basis by now.
He sets down his drink and book, and gestures toward the other chair.
Sit, please. My home is your home.
He gets up, takes the clothing from my hands and puts it aside, then fusses with a pot that's placed over a small burner. He pours a steaming drink from it and hands it to me. It smells rich and delicious, and there's powdery cinnamon skimming the top. What is it? I ask, settling back into the cushioned chair, testing the heat of the rich drink against my lips. Fane sits and picks up his own cup, smiling his cat-like grin at me.
Ishkarten cocoa. I did promise you some. It's so good, you'll want to fast to it and have its babies.
I cough out a laugh at his outrageous comment. Gratified, Fane takes a sip, eyeing me with mischief. I taste the cocoa, and am momentarily overcome with bliss. The rich, sensual sweetness of the creamy drink explodes in my mouth, delighting every sense. Oh, Fane! I enthuse, forgetting to be awkward about using his first name. It's so good! He smiles contentedly at me, licking away the half moon of cocoa coating his upper lip. Heartened, I return his smile.
It's nice to see you smile, Tesla.
He tells me, his voice gentle.
You've a lovely smile.
I look down at the cocoa, blushing. I don't know where you found such a stunning dress.
Ah.
He cuts in, eyes twinkling.
You will find that I am delightfully resourceful.
I nod at this, amused, then take a deep breath, growing more serious. Fane, what's going on tonight? They don't force fasting, do they? His levity disappears.
Is your grandfather likely to force you, Tesla?
No, I say with a shake of my head. No, he wouldn't. And no one would fast me now anyway. I throw him a level look, bitterness seeping through. I think Nils Arden briefly fancied me, but now he hates me. Because of my friendship with Jules. Fane gives a short laugh and nods with understanding.
Ah, yes. Mage Nils Arden.
He shoots me a knowing glance.
He's quite lovely, but a tad inflexible in his views. Life doesn't flow in such rigid lines, my dear, as much as we might like it to.
He shoots me a poignant look. The rumors about me aren't true. I tell him flatly. Fane smiles benignly.
Rumors are like chaff, my love. Don't give them anything rough to hook onto, and they float away on the wind.
But they're complete lies. Jules and I, we were never intimate. Fane waves his hand, as if clearing my words from the air.
Whatever he is to you, Tesla, I've no judgment on it.
His eyes darken, his expression growing insistent.
He's a Celt. I'd speak of him no more.
I bristle at this. Celt or not, Jules is my friend. I'm not ashamed of him.
Nor should you be, sweet Tesla.
Fane agrees with a calm nod.
But there's nothing wrong with you being unashamed privately.
I won't deny my friends, I staunchly insist.
And that is absolutely commendable, my dear, but also potentially tragic.
Fane lets out a deep sigh, shakes his head, and looks to the ceiling.
I keep surrounding myself with such stubborn idealists.
He closes his eyes, shakes his head again, then picks up a plate full of biscuits with purple candied flowers gracing their tops.
Here, have a lavender biscuit,
he says lightly, holding the plate out to me.
They're lovely, flavored with vanilla and cardamom.
Though I'm still unsettled, I take a biscuit and bite into it. The flavors of the buttery, spiced biscuit perfectly complement the cocoa. Slightly mollified by the amazing food, I look to Fane.
Patriotic fervor is running high,
Fane cautions me, all amusement gone.
One can speak more freely in Verpatia, especially at the university. But not here, Tesla. Not two steps away from the front lines.
He pours himself more cocoa, his expression turning untroubled once more. He smiles at me.
One must be smart in this world, sweet one.
I bristle at his lecturing me about the world. What does he know of the world? He's kind, to be sure, and I like Fane a great deal. But he's pampered and privileged. With his lavender biscuits and his spiced cocoa, his fancy embroidered tapestries and his luxurious tent and all his money, a rich, entitled mage barely out of his teens, if I had to guess. How did you and Vale become friends? I ask, an edge of cynical challenge creeping into my tone.
Do all the rich people congregate together?
A laugh bursts from Fane's mouth, and he looks me over with narrow-eyed incredulity.
My people weren't moneyed. I grew up in Graveshire, further down the river than you, my dear.
Shock courses through me, disbelief riding close on its heels. I eye him with skepticism. You're a lower river gardenerian. Fane narrows his eyes further, his mouth lifting into a sly feline smile.
So you think lower river gardenerians can't be cultured and refined?
I flush. No, no, of course not, I stammer, immediately chastened.
My father was an illiterate pig farmer,
Fane tells me, a hard gleam lighting his gaze.
Horrible man. We did not get on. I was never his vision of what his only son should be. I've a penchant for learning, for elegant things. I have...
He pauses, his lip curling with cool defiance.
Artistic fancies. He caught me embroidering with my sisters when I was 10.
His expression darkens.
You've seen the scars on my back.
I suck in a quick breath of air. I was barely conscious on our way here, mage drunk beyond belief. But I remember the pale lines crisscrossing the skin of Fane's entire back.
He beat me senseless.
Fane bites out the words with a cold smile. But then, I was beaten by so many.
Until I turned 14 and came into my power.
His eyes grow fierce, full of glittering pain and simmering anger. For a brief moment, it's as if the tense interior shimmers and darkens, and we're cast into the ocean's great depths. I have the strong sense of devastating water power gathering on all sides, and am struck by how overwhelmingly dangerous Fane is.
What happened?
I ask, my voice almost a whisper. The tent brightens as Fane's pain and anger fall away. His staggering power abruptly subdued, as if brushed behind a curtain.
No one ever beat me again, he says lightly with a shrug. I left soon after, went to sea, gained employment as a water and wind mage on merchant vessels, and became quite rich.
Did you ever see your family again? I venture. Fane's head bobs in a suppressed laugh, and then his gaze hardens.
I went back home once, he tells me with a chilly grin. As soon as I came into money, I gathered my sisters and took them to Valgard with me.
My eyes widen. And your father let you? Fane's smile turns dangerous.
He took some convincing, privately, with my wand jabbed into his vile throat.
The color in the tent darkens and ripples once again, and I feel a heavy pressure, as if leagues of water are surrounding us. Then Fane's power withdraws, flowing back into him, the colors of the room vivid once more. Fane settles back in his chair, his expression warming.
I met Vale about a year later, en route to the Cilician Isles. We've been friends ever since.
He grins.
We've had more than a few adventures together, and though our affinity lines are complete opposites, we fit together, Vale and I, like two pieces of a puzzle.
I ponder this for a moment, trying to decide if there's a deeper meaning behind Fane's words. If that means the two of them really are together, as more than just friends. An acute sense of my isolation washes over me, filling me with sadness and a bit of envy. At least they have each other. They're not alone like me. I clear my throat, dismissing my feelings of self-pity, and say lightly, I'm surprised Vale will suffer your company. You're even more lower river than I am. His eyes dance at this.
Don't let Vale upset you, sweetling. He doesn't do tactful.
I purse my lips at him. So I've noticed. He laughs and holds the plate out to me again.
Here, have another biscuit.
I take one as he watches me, his expression growing thoughtful.
You know, Tesla, he says, his voice kind. I have friends on the other side, too.
I nod, suddenly drawn in by his openness and our growing kinship. Tears prick at my eyes as I think of Jules, and my lips begin to tremble.
Jules. Where are you, Jules?
I look down at my gleaming cocoa cup in one hand and the biscuit in the other, the images growing liquid and wavy through the veil of my tears. The feeling of sadness overwhelms me, and I begin to sob. After a moment, I hear Fane get up and kneel down before me. He rests his hand on my arm.
It's hard, isn't it?
He asks, his own voice breaking.
To have a mind that strays outside the lines?
I nod jerkily, my chest heaving. Fane grips my arm gently, and his cool water magic flows into me, quickly dampening my unsettled fire, slightly calming the storm that's roiling inside me. Some of the tension released, I let the tears flow freely, and he holds on, his magic a soothing comfort. There's no attraction in it, just friendship and understanding.
Take heart, my love, he tells me. We've both moved through insurmountable odds, and yet here we are, improbably alive, sipping cocoa.
The sheer outrageousness of this catches me off guard, and I cough out a tear-soaked laugh. We're sipping cocoa, I tell him, sniffling. In an Ishkart tent.
That belongs to a devastatingly handsome level 5 Gardnerian mage of considerable influence,
he puts in helpfully. I laugh, my voice stuffy from the tears, and smile at him with deep affection. Do you need a fast mate, Fane? I ask teasingly. Fane gives a hearty laugh and tilts his head to the side, a rueful look in his eyes.
Oh, honey, you wish.
Our eyes meet, momentarily aligned in perfect understanding and acceptance. He sits back on his heels and grins at me.
I will not fast to you, Tesla Harrow, but I like you. We understand each other, I think, in ways unique to the lowly folk.
No one will ever fast to me, I tell him. Not with all the rumors. Fane considers this.
Perhaps not, sweetling, but you're clever. You'll find your way. I'd wager on it.
He pats my arm and rises, holding out his hand to me.
Come, sweet Tesla. I'm a water mage. I'll draw a nice bath for you, and you can get yourself properly cleaned up. And then we'll turn you into a creature 10 million times more enchanting than all those Upper River girls combined.
Chapter 19. Predator. I am transformed. My body scrubbed clean and smelling of vanilla and jasmine soap. My hair blessedly washed, combed out, and styled similarly to Rosebeth's, in long, flowing locks with tiny, interwoven braids created by Fane's nimble fingers. And I've never been garbed so richly. The entire tunic and underskirt catch the light of every torch or lantern I pass. The black silk shimmering gold and red as I move, and the rubies reflect golden stars of light. A threatening storm hangs over the west, thunder steadily rumbling, puffs of lightning periodically flashing, the very air charged with electricity. Fane walks through the base with me, my arm threaded through his. He's handsome as sin, with his silks perfectly pressed and a rakish smile on his face. We must be quite the impressive-looking pair, judging by all the eyes turning toward us as we pass. I flush, noticing more than a few appreciative glances from young men.
I will find you later, my dear lady,
Fane tells me with a mischievous smile, leaning to kiss the back of my hand. He's to meet up with the other level 5 mages before this evening's gathering, and I'm to find my grandfather. There's a bustle of activity around us. Torches being lit, couples chatting animatedly and often ardently, while the singles in the crowd seek to secure fasting partners for the mass fasting that's planned. Fane strides confidently away with effortless grace. I turn and begin to weave my way through the rows of tents toward the base's mammoth command tent. It's the only tent large enough to hold both the unfasted soldiers and most of the fasting-age refugees and their families. I haven't walked but a few steps when I see Jenna and her lovely Upper River friends laughing and chatting up ahead. Getting ready to fast to level 5 mages, I imagine sourly, to continue their easy, charmed, elitist lives. No matter, I remind myself. You'll find work as an apothecary apprentice. Fane can help you. And you'll eventually get your small, warm cottage in Verpatia. Things will be okay. But I'm tired. Too tired to endure Jenna's mocking ways. I don't feel equal to it. So I quickly dip between tents, watching Jenna, waiting for her and her cruel friends to turn and make their way toward the command tent. Jenna catches sight of something and gestures for her friends to continue on without her. They smile and set off, looking backward a few times to shoot her admiring smiles. I feel Vale's heat just before he strides into view, and I quickly lean back against a tent wall, taking shelter in the shadows. My heart is suddenly racing in my chest, my fire reaching for him against my will. I try to quell the flames, hoping he doesn't notice me. Jenna's face has gone all doe-eyed and bashful. I watch as she moves to intercept Vale, her voice sweet and sultry.
Mage Gardener?
Vale slows and turns to look at her, his movements full of lithe grace, his hand stiff on his wand. There's such power in the way he holds himself, coiled and seething. He eyes her coldly, but I can sense the edges of his fire, tightly held in check.
I was there that night. Perhaps you remember,
she tells him, moving in close, feigning an enchanting hesitancy.
In Doveshire, I saw what you did for us. You were so, so powerful. I had to speak to you, to thank you.
She looks away momentarily, as if overcome by his magnificence, demure and lovely. She brings her heavily lashed eyes back up toward his stern face.
Thank you, Mage Gardener. May I have the honor of sitting with you this eve?
Vale's wintry stare doesn't budge, but his controlled fire lashes out at the edges. He looks at her probingly, his lips turning up in an icy smile. When he speaks, he bites out each word.
Your ambitions far outweigh both your beauty and your charm. Please let me pass.
Jenna's eyes catch fire, her mouth falling open.
You are not kind,
she sputters. Vale makes a sound of disdain.
And you are absolutely predatory.
He starts to walk away from her, then briefly turns around and sets his intense eyes on her.
There are a number of level 5 mages who are unfasted and far more gullible than I. Go flirt with them.
Vale turns on his heel and strides away from her, his silver-striped cloak flapping behind him, tendrils of angry fire lashing back, stinging at my affinity lines. Jenna turns away in a huff, her eyes storming with outrage, her hands in tight fists, looking as if she'd run after him and strike him down if she could. Another group of Jenna's friends approaches, and she immediately falls in with them, making her own way to the command tent. I blink after them, Vale still visible far down the path, like a dark specter moving alone through the night.
Mage Tesla Harrow.
I flinch in surprise at the low, mocking voice emanating from the shadows to my right. I turn and see his eyes before I make out the rest of him. It's dark here, between such a long line of tent walls, away from the main roots. No torches. His eyes are large and frigid green, every color of green in pale, alternating lines, like ice picks. The savagely cold lines of his affinity crawl over me like a creeping frost. Mage Malkin Bane. The level 5 mage who killed Daisy that horrible night as she huddled in the shadows of the livestock pen. He killed her without a moment of hesitation, and he enjoyed it. I'm suddenly aware of how isolated we are here, all alone, the closest people still quite a distance away. His icy eyes flick over me, making my skin crawl, his chill seeping further into me.
So this is what was hidden under all the filth.
My heart picks up speed. I'm frightened of him, and he knows it. He unhitches himself from the tent pole he's leaning on and moves toward me, his hands hidden casually in his tunic's pockets.
Did you whore yourself out to that kilt?
He asks the question so lightly that at first I'm sure I must have misheard him. But his smile grows lascivious, and I realize I did not mishear. My shoulders go tense with offense.
Excuse me?
I sputter, taking a step back. He laughs and moves closer.
The Celt,
he clarifies.
Were you his little whore? I think you were.
A flicker of terror flashes up my spine, and I open my mouth to protest. But before I can respond, his hand flashes out and grabs my arm. Ice sears through me, knifing, twisting, a sly affinity wind coming in close on its heels, invading, probing, hurting.
Leave me alone!
I cry out, wrenching away from him, the harsh sting of his eyes still painfully encircling my arm. I turn and run for the crowds, for the warm torchlight, for safety. His cruel laugh sounds out behind me.
We'll find out,
he calls after me.
We'll find out soon enough, Tesla Harrow.
Heart thudding, I finally reach the command tent. I spot my grandfather up ahead, tottering on his knobby cane, just one more mage in a sea of refugees.
What's the matter, child?
He asks as I hastily approach.
You look as if you've seen an Icaral demon.
He eyes me with paternal concern.
I'm fine,
I tell him, my voice hoarse. I glance over my shoulder worriedly, terrified Malkin Bane might be trailing after me. It's nothing, it's just that I'm unable to speak for a long moment as I look into my grandfather's kind, watery eyes, deeply spooked by Malkin's icy grip.